Shane is staying in. Ty's phone beeps with a text message. He frowns at it briefly. The elevator door pings open. Oh, but I do. Ty is racing down the hallway, and I follow him, wishing I wasn't in a vintage cocktail dress so I could run faster and that I didn't kill my phone earlier today so I could warn Shane. Ty will crush him if he gets the chance. I'm frantic. And when I see a maid pushing her cart in our direction, I stop her and beg her to call security. Tyler kicks another door open and walks straight into one of the rooms. I don't know who told him Shane's room number, but whoever it was had good intel. I see Shane sitting on the edge of the bed, fiddling with his phone. What the? He stares at Ty in bewilderment, but regains composure fast. You have a lot of nerve coming here, Wilder. You slashed my tires. You beat up my roommate. You hurt Blair bad. No offense, but you're kind of a mess, dude. People don't pull shit like that. Ty grabs Shane by the neck of his I can give a headache to an aspirin t-shirt, but he doesn't hit him. I know he wants to prove a point to me, but he is struggling. Still fighting his demons, his anger fits. And that's what I'm afraid of. That he's still the kid who can be lured into a fight the minute things go south. You. Ty shoves a finger into Shane's chest. Always wanted her for yourself. Just take the damn hint. She doesn't want you. You lost. I won. She's mine. Shane jerks loose of his hold. Dude, you only won momentarily. And as usual, that's only because you cheated. She didn't know what kind of guy you are, what kind of stuff you do. Blair's not yours. She'd never willingly get it on with a male prostitute. Ty's eyes flare, his jaw clenching, and he takes a step closer to Shane. I know I shouldn't be standing here like an idiot, but things haven't gotten physical yet, thank God, and maybe there's a chance Ty will shed some light on his reasons for what he's done. You know nothing. Ty utters every word like a separate sentence. You told Blair that I used steroids. I never touched them. You took half-truths from your junkie roommate and pieced them into a web of lies. Ty's low voice sounds like a constant threat. Shane's not intimidated. He thrusts out his chin. You put my roommate in the hospital because he somehow ended up on you and Jesse's shit list, and that's the truth. The whole, messy, inconvenient truth. Your roommate is the one who screwed up. Josh is not a stable guy. He needs rehab. And you need a new set of morals. Shane kicks his suitcase in frustration. You can make excuses for nearly killing the guy, but what's your excuse for tapping hundreds of women to get fights and money? Let's hear that one. Shane folds his arms and narrows his eyes. I bet it's good. Ty's own eyes are furious now, and I know he's been pushed too far. I rush between them, resting one hand on each of their chests. Ty's heartbeat says it all. He's already in his own imaginary ring. I just hope it's not too late to drag him out, kicking and screaming before he hurts my best friend. Okay, party's over. Ty, you have no business talking smack about Shane. He just wanted to warn me, as a friend. I could have heard the same stuff from anybody. Yeah, it just happened to be the guy who's probably wanted in your pants from the moment he met you. I roll my eyes. We met in third grade. Ty looks momentarily stumped, but Shane isn't helping. Get the hell out of my room, Wilder. Not before you admit to Blair you don't know shit about what I did or do, past or present. Shane's fists clench. Get the hell out of my room. Or, Ty taunts. Shane zones in on Ty's face, his blue eyes narrowing. He's not a violent guy, never has been. But he also never takes shit from anyone. He usually walks away when things get messy, but it's hard to walk away when a guy like Ty is blocking your way. They stare each other down. Then Shane throws a sudden punch straight at Ty's face. Blood drips from his nose. Ty smiles grimly, turning to me and offering me a wink. Just for the record, baby. Your right hook is so much meaner. Shane throws a few wild punches, which Ty dodges easily. Shane is obviously pissed off and maybe a little drunk. I spot some empty beer bottles next to the TV. I can't move. I can't speak. I can barely breathe. When Shane launches himself at Ty, I know that Ty can't let this go. His fight reflex is stronger than him. Ty strikes back hard. The nauseating sound of his fists connecting with Shane's face and body jabs my ears. Stop it! Let go of him! I sandwich myself between them, pushing Ty out of the room. Get away from him! My voice cracks. For a moment there, it looks like Ty gets his shit together. He looks down at me, his eyes tired. Shane takes the opportunity to jet out the door, but Ty thrusts me aside and launches at Shane again. Panic rushes through me as he chases Shane down the hotel corridor. I race to catch them. Ty grabs the back of Shane's shirt and jerks him to a halt. I'm about to step between them and throw myself in the line of fire for Shane when I see Mom, Dad, and Izzy spill from an elevator. A second later, Jesse and Dawson rush out of a second elevator. They're all sweaty and flushed, and other than Jesse, they all pant like they've just completed a triathlon. I suspect they've been running around hunting for me and Ty. The men are tearing Ty apart from Shane before things get even messier for the XWL star. There are a lot of sins you can commit in Vegas, but sending a guy to the hospital is probably not one of them, especially if you're a professional athlete competing in a big televised fight. A quick look at Shane reveals a busted lip, bruised cheeks, and what will soon be a black eye. I'm too pissed off to examine Ty's face. Whatever injury Shane's given him, he'll survive. Ty points his finger at Shane. He twisted things to turn her against me. Shane takes a seat on the floor and holds his head in his hands, trying to regulate his breathing. Ty is still blocked by Jesse and Dawson. Whatever he did, Jesse says, you have to drop it now, bro. Get your shit together. You've got a fight tomorrow night. You can't afford to get arrested or hurt. He studies Ty's bloody nose and his arm, which sports a long, ugly scratch. His lips curl in disbelief. Jesus, the guy scratched you? No, that was my girlfriend. Does Shane need an ambulance? Someone interrupts, maybe my mom. I'm not really present in this situation. Everything feels like a bad dream. And like most dreams, it's complete chaos. I wish someone would wake me up from this nightmare. I'm fine. No hospital, Shane says, but he groans into his hands. Izzy hurries to his side. Her eyes are welling up, and she sits next to him, lifting his chin between her fingers. She examines the cuts and marks on his skin with furrowed brows, and my heart breaks in two to see just how much it kills her to see him hurt. You'll be okay. You're strong. Her voice is almost a whisper. But we need some ice. And a fucking whiskey to go with it, Shane snaps. And there are a few chuckles from my side of the family. Do I need to call my lawyer? Dawson rubs Ty's back and circles, like a dad. Will this douche press charges? He's not even remotely annoyed with his fighter. That confirms my worst fears about Ty. This isn't the first time something like this has happened. Ty is what he is. A violent, volatile guy who'll do anything to get what he wants, even if other people get screwed in the process. I'm not pressing charges, Shane blurts from the floor. Izzy is now running her fingers through his tousled blonde hair. Are you sure that's wise? My mom asks. He's clearly dangerous. It's like being punched in the face. I feel the tears and the pressure in my nose like I'm going underwater. I hate Tyler for what he did, but I also love him enough to know I'll never get over the fact that my parents will, under no circumstances, ever accept him after this. I can handle Wilder, Shane says. I just want him out of my face. Fine by us. Let's move it. Dawson is only too happy to step out of the situation. I still haven't figured him out. Is he a sinner for putting up with Ty's and Jesse's antics? Or a saint for tolerating both of these boys? Blair? Ty asks. I shake my head, unable to look at him. I just can't. Not right now. Not after all he's done and everything I found out. Please just go, I whisper, fat tears chasing each other down my cheeks. I can hear him taking a deep breath. She's right, Dawson says. We need to get you cleaned up for the press conference. He pulls Ty toward the elevator, but Jesse lingers. The other fighter leans close to my ear. Ty loves you. What do you need to prove it? A naked singing telegram? Don't crush him a day before a big fight. My chest squeezes tight, but I don't waver. I hope he's crushed. Serves him right for how we bagged this fight in the first place. I watch the XWL Media Day on TV from my room. I give myself a mental slap on the wrist for still being interested in Ty's fight. No, scratch that, in Ty in general. And a mental punch in the face for actually watching the press conference. It appears I have zero self-control, despite the fact that this dude totally kicked my best friend's butt. I don't care if Shane was the one to throw the first punch. On TV, Ty is on stage sitting on a pair of bar stools with his opponent, Owen Doherty. Behind them, there's a wall of endorsements, and each fighter is circled by their own entourage. Ty holds the mic to his lips. He chews gum, wearing a black designer shirt, fitted cigar pants, high-top sneakers, and a black baseball cap. He's so incredibly sexy, I want to lick him head to toe. But then I remember a lot of other girls actually did do just that, and paid good money for it, too. The thought makes me want to hurl. It's killing me to see Ty still oozing charisma while I'm falling apart, struggling to remember how to breathe. Doherty looks extra douchey in a pair of sunglasses and a three-piece suit. There should be a special section in hell for people who wear sunglasses indoors. He smack-talks Ty to oblivion and back. He pushes every single button, starting off by referring to Ty as an inbred redneck. I get that they need to sell this fight, and that trash talk is part of the game. But Doherty seems to have sold his soul, willing to do anything nasty as long as it's good for his career. Oh, right. Ty did that, too. Ty gives his indifferent smirk, popping gum and blinking slowly in Doherty's direction. Dawson is sitting next to his star, his arms folded. Occasionally, he whispers something in Ty's ear. One of the reporters stands up with an anxious smile and directs a question at Ty. I have a source that just texted me you were in an altercation in a Vegas hotel earlier today. Something to do with your girlfriend? Care to elaborate? Ty bounces his leg and pinches the bridge of his nose with his thumb and forefinger. I notice that Shane didn't even leave a mark on his face. No comment. Doherty gives a mean laugh. Don't worry, Wilder. Step into the ring with me tomorrow and your love life will be the least of your worries. I promise to smash your pretty boy face in. The audience taunts with oohs. The crowd is eating this up, and the truth is, Doherty brought his A-game to this press conference. He's shredding Quiet Ty to pieces publicly. Doherty is a one-man show, and it's evident his opponent isn't up to it. Jesus, Blair, can you change the channel? Izzy bursts into the room. She's been helping Mom and Nana Marty with some last-minute shopping for the wedding. I was excused, obviously, seeing as my life is a circus of fatal mistakes and misunderstandings. Everyone just got a front-row glimpse at the show earlier today. I think I've had enough of Tyler Wilder, Izzy clarifies, as if there's any doubt what her complaint is about the TV. I turn off the set and arch one brow. You do realize that Shane threw the first punch, right? And the second, and the third, and the fourth. You do realize that Tyler is a professional XWL fighter, right? She mocks. She plops down on our king-size bed with a sigh. Her shopping bags frame her supermodel body. Isn't there, like, a special oath they need to take, like doctors, so they can't hit random non-XWL people? I'm not even going to dignify that with an answer. I bury my face in the pillow next to her. Everything hurts. My head, my eyes, my body, the thoughts swirling in my head like a tornado. I can't believe he was a male prostitute. I can't believe he cheated his way to the top. I can't believe I slept with him. I can't believe I slept with him! My bad luck can't possibly up its game anymore, right? Wrong. Izzy clears her throat from her side of the bed, a clear sign that something awful is about to come out of her mouth. I lift my head from the pillow, and sure enough, she averts her gaze quickly and her cheeks flush. She's holding her cell phone in one hand. With her other hand, she reaches out to pat my head like I'm a 3-year-old. What now? I can't take more bad news. It's difficult enough coming to terms with the idea of not seeing Ty again. Smelling his gorgeously manly scent, hearing his voice and laugh, or just watching one of his stupid guy movies when he's next to me. Izzy lets out a sharp breath. I hate to do this to you. Do what? There's more? Is this Let's Crack Blair in 2 Day? I hope it's not going to be an annual thing. She chews on her lower lip. Well, I was surfing the news on my phone and stumbled across something. Just to give you a heads up, your name and face are plastered all over a gossip website next to Ty's. And it's your prom picture. The really bad one.
Don't freak out. Do not freak out. Just don't freak out.
I'm freaking out, I croak, sitting up on the bed. Soon my legs are crisscrossed, my computer in my lap. I don't understand. A week ago, all was great in the land of Blair Stern. Grades were high, boyfriend was hot, Vegas was tempting. Brain, hormones, and heart played nice, and everyone knows three is a crowd. What happened? Izzy sits next to me, squeezing one of my shoulders, offering support, yet pouting at the same time. She's so used to seeing her pictures on sites like this. I don't think she gets how awkward I feel right now. Thank God Ty is not exactly Bradley Cooper. The item on his new girlfriend, ex-girlfriend, but they don't know that yet, is getting stale pretty quickly. I have to scroll down to see the story. There's a glorious picture of him smiling in a suit, the sexy twinkle in his eyes visible for all to admire, and an awful picture of me from my high school prom. I ended up wearing the dress Izzy decided to ditch at the last minute, and since I've always been a little curvier than my twin, the shiny gold sequined stretch fabric hugs all the wrong places. I look like a Twix bar. His good luck charm? The headline asks. A handful of comments follow, with one asking, would you do Ty's chick? And another answering, I'm guessing that he would, and did. Now I really, really need to throw up. But there's no time to drown in self-pity, because I'm dealing with a clogged email account and a buzzing Facebook profile. Dozens of people I know, along with total strangers, wondering how come they didn't know Ty and I were a thing and sending me friend requests. I don't answer any of them, and I'm so, so relieved that I destroyed my phone.
You think you caught something when you slept with him?
Izzy rolls on her stomach on the bed and takes one more look at my hideous picture. She's really pissed that they outed me as her twin, seeing as I look like a nightmare in the prom dress. Huh? I ask, and then her question registers. Ick! I hope not. She's right. I need to get tested. The irony hits me hard in the gut. If this guy, who's all about clean eating and exercise and talking me into quitting weed, ended up giving me something, I swear I'm going to lose it. I'll schedule an appointment when I get back home. Izzy grabs my hand in hers and offers me a pity smile.
I'll come with.
Chapter 14. Izzy is standing right next to me in the Elvis Funky Chapel. We're both holding bouquets, but I'm not wearing the vintage Valentino I tried on before yesterday's disaster. I guess I've been metaphorically and physically stripped of my right to wear anything couture. I'm back in the dark red mermaid-style dress I originally planned. I don't mind. What I do mind is being the center of freaking attention at the wedding. News has broken that Ty Wilder was my boyfriend. I try to look on the bright side. At least no one knows about his male prostitution phase. The public and most of the guests all think he's just a violent jerk. Shane, Izzy, and I are the only people at this wedding who know the truth, and I'm planning to take this one to the grave with me. I may not have dated the most sought-after bachelors in the country before Ty barged into my life, but dating a former male prostitute is a new low, even for me. Okay, maybe I'll just tell Nana Marty. Nana won't judge. She won't tell my parents. Nana can keep a secret. I'm pretty sure she's got a pile of them securely tucked deep inside her head. I watch my grandmother in her very skimpy and age-inappropriate white dress, standing in front of her Prince Charming, Simon. Simon is pretty darn cool. He's handsome for his age, tall, with thick white hair and steely blue eyes. He's wearing a tux and looks better than my chunky 50-something father. My parents stand across from Izzy and me. It's obvious they are none too thrilled about the wedding. But, unlike me, Nana isn't a person who gives a damn about what they think. Mom keeps shifting and staring at her shoes while Dad zones out. In his mind, he's at the golf course, talking politics with his friends and comparing golf clubs. The chapel looks like a deserted branch of Olive Garden, but the ceremony is lovely. And me? I'm a hot mess. I'm trying to keep it together, but every thought I have is of Ty.
Blair? Are you crying? Again?
Izzy whisper yells at me as the Marilyn Monroe look-alike performs the service. I feel so bad. Nana did all of this so I could be in Vegas, and her plans backfired completely. I'll be dealing with the shockwaves of the explosion for a long-ass time. I shake my head.
Nope, not crying. Just happy for Nana. You may kiss the bride.
Marilyn beams at Simon. He looks at Nana Marty with eyes filled with happiness, but, thankfully, keeps it clean and only gives Nana a peck on the lips. Mom and Dad smile tightly while Izzy and I jump on our fragile grandmother. Izzy twerks around her, the flowers in her hand raining petals on the floor, while I cling to her shoulders like she's my only chance of being saved from a starving shark. An injured Shane is standing with his parents in an aisle, surrounded by a few more guests, golf clapping. He's looking at Izzy. Not at me, not at the bride, just Izzy. She is his sun and his moon. The want in his eyes is unmistakable, even with the new purple frames Ty has given him. Nana pats me on the cheek and holds my chin firmly in one hand. Oh, my darling Blair, she murmurs into my nose. Your mother told me what Tyler has been up to. Had I known you were going to bring enough drama for an HBO miniseries, I would have brought more vodka. I want all the gossip. Meet me in the lobby bar in an hour. Simon can pop my imaginary cherry tomorrow. Hell, I'm going to need therapy after Vegas. Back at the hotel, I tell Izzy I'm meeting Nana downstairs for drinks and ask her if she wants to tag along.
Too tired.
She slips out of her gown and walks around the room in her undies. That nasty Elizabeth's Passion thong she's wearing is glaring at me like a sweaty pervert in a raincoat. But other than that, there's no denying her body is damn near perfect.
I think I'm going to call it a night.
Izzy never turns down an excuse to drink, let alone in public, where she can be seen and fawned over by her fans. You sure? I frown at my sister, perplexed. She nods.
Seriously, go drown your sorrows, sissy. You totally earned it.
Nana and I opt to sit at the far corner of the bar. She's still wearing her wedding gown and the brightest, stupidest grin, and I'm tucked into a gray, loose-fitting garb I sometimes use as my period pajamas.
No bra.
Like Izzy said, I deserve it after everything I've been through. I knock down drink after drink in between chewing my swizzle stick. It's already approaching 10 o'clock, and I know Ty's fight should be starting right about now. I don't want to think about it. I can't stop thinking about it. This is so jacked up. I finally rest my head on the bar. The room spins around me, and I feel nauseous. He's been pimping himself for, what, 4 years now? Ever since he started doing this professionally. That could be 1,000 women. How irresponsible can he be?
It's deplorable. Nana Marty agrees, wrinkling her nose. But he didn't know you back then, and by the time he met you, he'd already changed his ways.
I scan her face in horror. Maybe it's because I've punished myself and searched for pictures of him on the internet again, this time with women. I can't see a picture of him with a woman without wondering. Has she paid to sleep with him? Has she writhed underneath him like I did? How many times? What positions? When and where? How much money? Who did Ty get to fight afterwards?
Ugh. Let's play the devil's advocate here, shall we?
Nana raps the bar loudly to snap me back to reality. Billows of cigarette smoke travel between us, and I cough in annoyance. I may have smoked the occasional blunt, but I absolutely hate cigarettes. How it's possible to smoke inside hotels here is beyond me, but I'm starting to realize that in Vegas you could puff directly into a baby's face if you're willing to put some cash next to a blackjack dealer.
He wanted to build his career. I agree that he was very young and unbelievably foolish to do what he's done. It's appalling, really. But is it your place to forgive him? He hasn't done anything to you, sweetheart. He just has baggage that is incredibly difficult to stomach.
Is Nana high?
He was a male prostitute, I pronounce slowly, hoping it'll drill into her brain.
And he messed up my best friend's car. And he kept this information from me, even though he knew it was one hell of a deal breaker. She watches me swirling the ice in my empty glass and hands me her drink. I guzzle it.
I know how you feel, honey.
No, you don't, I think. You have no idea.
I'm just saying, you may feel differently in a few months. You can close the door on your relationship for Tyler right now. Just don't lock it.
I rest my forehead on the bar counter and close my eyes. This is a nightmare. Ty loves sex. Even if I do change my mind about him, which I won't, there's no way he'll wait for me. Hell, he's probably already planning to either lick his wounds or celebrate his win with another brand new girl tonight. I should totally lock the door behind my relationship with Ty. I already slammed it hard enough for everyone around me to hear. I crawl back to my room and push the door open. The first thing I notice is that Izzy isn't here. Our huge bed is empty, sheets and bedtime mints still neatly in place. We've been moved to a different suite since yesterday, seeing as our previous room had its door kicked in by a violent man-whore maniac. For a moment, I wonder whether I've actually entered the right room. But I did. And it's still empty. I stagger to the dresser and pick up a box with a card addressed Barbie. The box is white, sophisticated, and inviting. I don't need to guess who it's from. I open the small box and find a fancy new cell phone inside. I turn on the phone and watch as the screen lights up. One new text message, the cell alerts. Checking it, I see Ty has already saved his contact number under the name My Remorseful Boyfriend. His text says, "Don't do this to us." It was sent way past midnight, a few hours after he was done fighting, and it clearly suggests there was no after party on his agenda. Not that I care. We're done. I stay up most of the night, rereading Ty's message over and over again. This is bad. I should not be left alone with my feelings so confusing right now. Where the hell is Izzy? I mull over Ty's conversation with Ray. Hundreds of women. Hundreds of them. Big, small, tall, short, brunettes, blondes, dumb, smart, good in bed, bad in bed, tongues, teeth, lips, fingers, positions we tried, positions we didn't. The list goes on. I squeeze the new phone so hard I wince. I thought he saw me, but he didn't see shit. I'm sitting on a chair next to the window, legs crossed, ignoring the view and facing the door, when I hear it creaking open. Izzy tiptoes barefoot into the room, holding her heels in hand, not turning on the lights. "Hope you enjoyed it," I rasp from the gloom. Izzy jumps and lets out a small shriek.
"You scared the hell out of me!"
"Ditto, where have you been?" I stand up and walk toward my sister, skimming her. Yeah, she definitely looks guilty, flushed as hell.
"I went for a walk."
"Down Liarsville? How's the weather there?"
"Blair."
"Izzy?" She drops the heels on the floor and plops on the bed, rubbing her feet.
"I'll tell you once you take a chill pill for real."
"Do I look like I need more lies and secrets in my life?"
"Fine. I went to see Shane in his room."
She grabs a bottle of water from the minibar, shaking her head. She takes a gulp and stares past me out the window. The strip is still alive. Everyone else in this town seems to be enjoying it. She turns on the TV. I snatch the remote, turning it off. "I don't want to know if he won or lost," I explain. Izzy nods.
"Shane broke up with Gemma before he came to Vegas."
She smiles thinly. Not surprising, after what she told me about their little escapade abroad. These two will kill each other or get married in the next few months, I'm sure. "I'm sort of glad to hear it," I say, even though Gemma doesn't deserve it. She seems cool. He met her at an I Prevail gig.
"Whose side are you on?"
She throws a pillow at me, but I duck in time. My new phone bleeps again, making Izzy send a puzzled glance my way. It's 4 a.m. I peek at the new text. My remorseful boyfriend says, "You're wasting your time, Barbie. I'm not giving you up." Shouldn't Ty be asleep? I'm sure he must be exhausted after the fight.
"Where the hell did this come from?"
Izzy is ogling my new phone like it's a nuclear device. "You weren't here when it arrived?" I pinch my eyebrows. "So, who got it into our room?" We both stare at the phone with dazed eyes.
"Hotel staff. Like, duh."
Izzy blinks twice, trying to decipher why I'm so slow. started sending me gifts, I mutter to myself.
That's so nice of him, Izzy concludes, but unnecessary. Not being a man whore would have been more sufficient.
Chapter 15. I drown myself with extra shifts at Ned's now that I'm not busy with school anymore. I'm functioning, which is great. I pour a beer with a perfect head for a middle-aged guy who always tips generously. I lift my eyes to the flat-screen TV that's mounted on the wall and catch a glimpse of a rerun of Ty's bout on ESPN. I don't want to look, but my eyes dart to the screen, betraying me completely. There are only a handful of people sitting here, drinking beer. I wipe pint glasses with a dishcloth while watching the weigh-ins on screen. This is what Ty was starving himself for weeks. The invincible Owen Doherty is the first to step on the scale for the main event of the night, and after him, Tyler the Zombie Wilder follows. There are a bunch of ring girls in bikinis applauding behind them, and my heart tweaks in agony when I think about the close proximity of those babes to Ty. The commentator is enthusing about Ty's newest addition to his tattoo collection. Looks like Wilder got some new ink ahead of the fight. He's tattooed "Be Mine" on his chest above his heart. I wonder who the new girl is who he's asking to be mine. Jesus Christ, I think I'm hyperventilating again. Ty and Owen launch at each other after going on the scale. Doherty has his fist balled up to Ty's face. They're yelling and pointing at each other, but you can't hear shit through the heavy metal music. Back at Ned's, the men are watching the rerun intently, even though avid XWL fans already know how this fight ended last weekend. Everyone here is rooting for the zombie from Concord. It's like cheering for your home team. You don't have a choice. That's your team, and you stick to it. Such a great guy. The man who had just poured a beer tugs his baseball cap at the TV and beams at a very pissed-off Ty. Always nice to everyone in my shop whenever he drops by. Says hi and takes pictures with my boys. They're fans, he explains. On screen, people are cheering and shouting and chanting for Ty. My Ty. The guy who used to snuggle with me every night underneath his comforter. His crooked nose in my neck, his tongue swirling and flicking my earlobe, his flexed muscles pressing against my skin. Now he's everyone's, and it makes me want to crawl into a cave and wait for a slow, painful death. The fight is about to begin. Ty is coming out of the tunnel, wearing his signature black skull bandana, the one he wore the first time I saw him. His eyes are dead, completely turned off and indifferent to the chaos that surrounds him. I see a flicker of something flash for a second when they grease his face before he enters the cage. It's not exactly pain in his eyes, but sadness? Anxiousness? If he is worried about something, I know it has nothing to do with Doherty. It's about me. All me. The place is bustling with hundreds of people, swinging their plastic cups in the air, cheering excitedly and waving both American and Irish flags. I see you, Ty signs to the camera, and I know that he's signing to me. I know that tattoo doesn't say, be mine. The B is for my name. Blair. Barbie. I'm the girl he branded himself with, who he's claimed. Blair, mine. Barbie, mine. The girl who doesn't want to hear from him ever again is his. Me. The minute both men step into the cage, my heart stops beating. I'm so anxious to find myself holding my breath. Mikey notices my expression as Ty and Owen circle around each other, fists curled, throwing combinations at each other, but mostly missing one another.
You know this fight is from last Saturday night, right? Both guys are still alive. Well, one of them barely.
He pats my arm, chuckling to himself. I throw the towel over my shoulder and turn my back to the TV. I know and don't care, I sniff. Word got around fast at Ned's that Ty and I were together. Before the debacle in Vegas, he kept showing up every chance he got while I was working. The gossip site piece didn't help either. I'm not sure if Mikey has picked up on the fact that we are no longer an item, though. Blair, Mikey says softly, as if he's reading my mind. Come on. What's done is done. Watch it with us. I turn around to watch the rest of the bout. Doherty may be good at hyping the fight, But Ty is an amazing fighter who can spine-rip Doherty in seconds, Mortal Kombat style. He blocks Doherty's punches skillfully and has him on the mat in a matter of seconds, then grounds and pounds him on the floor. He manages to take down Doherty in a minute and 45 seconds. Months and months of preparation, endless hours of workouts, and enough mental stress to rival a president at war for less than 2 minutes of work. Ugh, men. It makes me giddy with emotion that he wins. Adrenaline pumps in my veins, making me dance behind the bar. The men at Ned's look pleased with the results, and I watch as both fighters pull their tees back on. Ty's is black with a white skull and says, "Zombie Nation." They bow to each other and shake hands politely, like they didn't just try to annihilate each other. The usual attractive woman reporter whisks Ty straight to the champion's interview, and I sneak to the back of the bar to stock up on some more Bud Light and also to avoid watching him more. He inked my initial on his heart. He won the fight, despite being all messed up. This gives me hope, because if he can bury his feelings, so can I. And that's exactly what I intend to do. Or, at the very least, I intend to try. Chapter 16. I decide to send the new phone that Ty got for me back to the grind. I don't dare set foot in there, though. Not after how I had left things with Dawson, a.k.a. the adoring coach, and Jesse, a.k.a. the wingman. Both probably consider me public enemy number one now that I dumped their boy. As for Ty, I would definitely never risk bumping into him. No. I sent the phone to the grind via Izzy, who doesn't seem to share my disdain for the XWL. She returns home horny as hell and muttering about Shane. She's already replaced my old phone with a new one, her graduation gift. I purposely get a new number so I won't be tempted to text Ty when I get lonely, sad, and teary-eyed at night. I earned my degree, but I skipped the commencement ceremony. I never really dug the whole college thing anyway. In hindsight, I may have been better off studying somewhere else, far away from home, but considering my lack of success in high school, there was no way my parents would have funded an out-of-state tuition fee, especially to major in communication studies. Needless to say, my parents were very disappointed with my decision to keep the festivities to a minimum, even more so when they suggested we celebrate my graduation at a restaurant and invited me to a steakhouse. Me, their daughter, who refused to eat meat since she was around 9. I declined politely. Mom was angry, Izzy reminded her of my food preferences, Mom apologized, and now we're all good. And by good, I mean the usual not talking about it state or repressed anger and silent tension typical in my family. But hey, I graduated. I freaking graduated, and no one can take that away from me. They thought I wouldn't, but I proved them wrong. Ha! Take that, Mr. and Mrs. Skeptical. Mikey and Bree throw me a little Sunday afternoon graduation party at Ned's. It's nothing, really. Just a few beers and ice cream sandwiches with the staff. It's not even my shift, so I find myself sitting on one of the stools next to Bree, holding a root beer in one hand and an ice cream sandwich in another, grinning when Mikey goes on and on about how they're all so proud of me. After his speech, Bree studies my face. How are you holding up, honey? I'm not, I want to tell her, but instead take a big gulp of root beer, buying time. Yeah, not bad, I finally say. Not bad at all. Jesus, even I don't buy this. Bree cocks her head, a funny look plastered on her face. Hey, are you and Ty back together? I snort loudly. Not in this lifetime. Bree purses her lips. She's awfully quiet when she excuses herself from the bar stool next to me, grabbing her drink and joining one of our colleagues, Amy. She doesn't even like Amy. I turn my head in the direction that made Bree change her mind about sitting next to me. And now it's my turn to purse my lips. Oh, no he didn't. Only he totally did. Heart takes a nosedive, and my shoulders tense. What are you doing here? I say quietly, my voice almost a whisper. The unbearable emptiness I've been walking around with for the past week turns into an excruciating pain that slams into me with anger. I may feel hollow without him, but seeing him now only makes things worse.
Can we please just talk? I'm running out of ideas about where and how to find you.
His voice, that I missed so dearly, is pulling every emotional string in my body. Good. I try to keep my expression neutral. That's the general idea. But even after saying this, I know that I can't let him leave without hearing him out.
It won't take long, Ty reassures.
I stride warily toward him, my quivering lower lip completely betraying whatever mask of cool I've been desperately trying to put on. Ty looks great, but not what I expected. Slightly thinner, not his bulky usual self, and his eyes are tired. Usually after a long-awaited fight, fighters go on binge fests and rock a few days of relaxation. But Ty looks even worse than he did when he cut weight and trained like hell. He's beat.
Let's take it outside.
He nods at the door and I follow him silently. He leans against the back wall outside, one foot and his back pressed against the bricks, his hands deep in his pockets. I fold my arms and wait for him to start. Well? I ask, expecting him to apologize. But he doesn't. He just stares at me blankly.
Well, what? I wanted to see you, see how you're doing. Say congrats about you graduating. Have you gone to that job interview yet?
Is he kidding me? Are you not going to apologize?
For what?
He wrinkles his forehead. I'm floored. Is this a joke? You were a male prostitute, I accuse.
Before I knew of your existence, before we've even met, I never even looked at a girl since our first date.
You hid your past away from me. You had no right.
I had every fucking right. It's my past, not my present, not my future. Besides, I remember pretty clearly I did promise to share my past with you at some point when I was ready. Not when your little BFF decided to throw another bash fest for me.
You put me at risk when you slept with me. I raise my voice, losing control over my emotions. My hands are shaking, but it doesn't stop me from waving them at Ty frantically. I could have caught something. This is serious. He looks away from my face, staring at nothing in particular. I know this strategy. I hit a nerve.
I always used protection, and I knew I was clean. Hell, you do realize we get tested before every fight to make sure we're all good, right? I'm sorry you were hurt, but I genuinely tried to up my game for you. It was never enough, though. You always kept running away every time things didn't fit into your perfect existence and listened to Shane instead of running things past me. But you know what? I don't remember giving you shit about it, Barbie.
What the hell? This is not what I was expecting to come out of this conversation. Why is he even bothered showing up here if he intended to lecture me about my behavior? Unfucking believable. How much did Nicole pay to sleep with you? I taunt, feigning amusement. I can't seriously dignify his last accusation with an answer. I know I wasn't perfect, but I didn't hold a destructive secret either. Tell me, so I can appreciate what you've given me for free. He rests his head on the wall behind him and lets out a bitter laugh that makes my skin crawl. Frankly, he seems just as pissed off as I am right now. More.
Nicole was just for fun. I didn't charge her shit. She came along way after I wrapped things up with Ray. I've been out of the business for 6 months now. Happy?
His cheeks are flushed, his breathing heavy.
I didn't come to talk here about Nicole.
So why did you come? I'm grinding my teeth, annoyed with myself for even mentioning her name.
I came here because I thought you might have calmed down, but I was wrong.
It's starting to seem like he's the one who isn't happy with me. I keep quiet, my eyes clinging to his face.
Nothing to say, huh?
His sad smile fills the gap between us with more than words. Ty pivots, and I have to do something more destructive. I can't let him leave before I scar him deeper than he scarred me. And he got fucking deep. Ray's right. You're still the guy you were, you know, I spit after him. You haven't changed. He turns around slowly, squinting his eyes and zeroing on me.
This is your cue to run away, sweetheart. So run. I'm done chasing.
Chapter 17. I suck at job interviews. When Mikey interviewed me for the position at Ned's, I arrived a half hour late, broke the glass of water he had offered me, and got caught lying about my experience as a bartender. So I'm keeping my expectations to the absolute minimum with the job interview as an intern at Diablo Hill magazine. In fact, if I manage not to break anything in the process, I'll declare victory. The fact that I have absolutely nothing to offer, I didn't even major in journalism, and my only connection to the school paper is that I once fooled around with a guy who wrote for the music section, doesn't help. But I'm eager to impress, and still on a high from graduating, so I'm hoping this will work in my favor. The sports editor is named Cameron, and he's the guy I'm about to meet. I borrow an outfit from Izzy because my wardrobe doesn't offer anything vaguely representable. Fancy black pants with a white collared shirt and matching pumps. With my hippie wavy hair in teenage posture, I look like I dressed up as a middle-aged bookkeeper for Halloween. Diablo Hill Magazine's headquarters is situated on the edge of Diablo Mountain in an architecturally dazzling loft with floor-to-ceiling windows. Beats me how a small local publication can afford such lavish digs. I walk into the pristine white foyer with blooming fresh tulips carefully tucked into elegant vases and breathtaking pictures of the surrounding landscape hung on the walls. The receptionist greets me with a smile wider than the fields outside, her 4-inch stilettos clicking against a pristine hardwood floor. She is insanely pretty and has the high-pitched voice of a toy dog, and I immediately know I'm not good enough for a place like this. But I'm already here, so I might as well enjoy the ethically sourced coffee. Violet, the rail-thin receptionist, leads me to Cameron's office while engaging me in a casual chit-chat, her huge grin both dazzling and scary. She knocks on Cameron's door and announces I've arrived. Then she leaves me on a sleek white chair to wait. Everything around me is white and wood and fancy, and it makes me feel like I'm in a Reese Witherspoon rom-com. I didn't even know places like this existed in real life. Cameron opens the door, and I'm instantly taken aback by his looks. He's hot. Hipster hot. He's got a messy, light brown hair, a dashing face, and dreamboat blue eyes. He's wearing a denim button-down shirt, quirky glasses, tight skinny jeans, and a sophisticated grin he obviously perfected over the years. Had I been emotionally available, Cameron would be the guy I'd crush on, for sure. Tall, lanky hipster, designed and molded to be unique and quirky and all. Oh, are those funky Chucks personalized? Who's your graffiti artist? And Baby Baby? Of course I've heard of them. Great band. But I can't get myself to even remotely excited about the idea of working closely with him when I'm still so totally and completely hooked on Ty. I shake his hand and flop into a chair opposite him while he sits behind his desk. Cameron is nice and cheery and asks me to call him Cam. His office window overlooks a postcard-worthy view of Diablo Mountain. So tell me about yourself. Cam knits his fingers together and gestures with his thumbs in my direction. This one is difficult. I'm not good at selling myself. I could sing the praises of Izzy, Shane, Bree, Mikey, and even Ty. But telling people about my strong points ain't happening. Still, I need to say something, so I do. I graduated from Diablo Hill School of Art recently. I majored in communications, and I'm very enthusiastic about my career. Professor Penniman was kind enough to recommend me after reading my assignment in journalistic reporting. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be interviewed here. Jesus, I just bored myself to sleep. I believe Cam has the same reaction because he nods at an even pause, which means what he's really doing is thinking about what he should have for dinner tonight. He presses his knitted pointer fingers to his lips, probably thinking of a way to break the ice. What do you know about sports? Very little. People usually sweat, but not always. I downplay my knowledge so he won't have any expectations. A shout out to all my underachiever peeps. High five. Follow any sport? NBA, NFL, XWL. So, Editor Cam has not been reading gossip sites recently. Good. I follow the XWL whenever I can. I inwardly cringe when I say this out loud because I really do condemn MMA as a sport, but I'm also aware that this is my strongest selling point at the moment. Yeah? He scans me with an arched brow, obviously calling me out on my bullshit. That's good, because we may have a local title holder soon and someone will need to cover that. I gulp hard. I think Ty Wilder stands a good chance of winning the championship. Cam smiles, suggesting that I passed an unspoken test. He slaps his desk and straightens up quickly.
I think I need a caffeine fix. What about you?
I think I need something stronger, like a shot of vodka or maybe crack cocaine. Sure, coffee sounds good. I follow him to the door, fidgeting with the hem of Izzy's designer shirt. Too tight, as per usual. Cam cocks his head to my outfit.
You do know that we don't really have a dress code here, right? You don't have to be all buttoned down. We're a creative group.
I let out a relieved sigh. Thank God, because I feel like an accountant in this outfit. Cam smiles.
Oh, and we have cool stuff like Pizza Friday and a pool table and PlayStation and Xbox in the common room. We even got a Wii. And a terrific sound system, of course.
I can work with that. I hitch one shoulder noncommittally. Cameron laughs, and we roll out into the sunny afternoon. He immediately lights a cigarette, and a pang of regret pierces through me. I would love to come home today and smoke a joint, take the edge off. But I know that I won't. Weed is no longer a part of my life, with or without Ty in the picture. We make our way to a local coffee shop and get our coffees, then Cam motions for me to follow him back to the office. We walk down the hallway but continue to talk. It's nice, knowing he can't examine my face while I answer his questions. It's less intimate somehow.
So when can you start?
Cam asks as he pushes his office door open. I curl my fingers around the hot paper cup, thinking about Ned's. I don't want to leave there, but I know I'd be stupid to turn down this opportunity. I'll need to check with my current employer, but I think a month's notice would be sufficient for them. My heart pounds in my ears.
And what do you think about us hiring you?
He turns around to face me before we enter his office. His eyes sparkle behind his hipster glasses. I think you're doing the right thing. I'm kind of pleasantly surprised with my journalistic abilities. I feel the smile spreading across my face. I discovered I'm good at something these past few months, and I can't wait to show it off to the world. Cameron grins and motions for me to take a seat in front of him. We're back to square one. He is staring at me. I'm staring back. Baby, I got my staring lessons from a fighter. I will stare back at you right until my eyes bleed.
You and I are going to get along just fine. And you'll meet a lot of awesome people here. My friend Amelia is the editor of the culture section, and I'm pretty sure this one's right up your alley. You can contribute to the culture section, too. Your portfolio will pile up quickly.
He seems to be at ease with our constant eye contact. Wow, I'd really like that. I don't know how much fun it's going to be working on sports items, but even if I ever get anywhere near culture and music, I just know I'll thrive.
Well then, Blair, tell your employer you're done serving drinks. Welcome to the Diablo Hill family.
Cameron winks. And for the first time since Vegas, I'm actually smiling not just out of politeness, but for real. Cam wastes no time throwing me in the deep end. He ignores the fact that I still need to hand in a month's notice and fills me in on a piece he wants me to publish this month. An editorial article about a new performance-enhancing drug named Exo. He tells me Exo stimulates the production of red blood cells and is very popular among athletes, even though it's been proven that the medication, originally invented to treat cancer patients after chemo, increases the risk of death. In fact, Exo stimulates the growth of certain tumors, so by using Exo, a lot of athletes are risking their lives every day just to get better, stronger, and faster at what they do.
The article's not about Exo itself. Exo is just the entry point. The article is about the psychological difference between competitive athletes and the rest of the population. We're interviewing a bunch of anthropologists and sports psychologists about this phenomenon. It's interesting how athletes will completely disregard their health for their sport. Sell their souls to the devil, so to speak.
You can say that again. I suppress a grunt. I'm guessing Cam would be head over heels to discover that Jesse Clement of XWL used steroids, and that Ty Wilder of the same MMA league pimped his body to get fights. But I'm afraid my loyalty lies firmly with the two fighters. I'm not even sure why, but the need to protect their secrets is way stronger than my need to impress my new boss. And I'm guessing there are plenty of examples, I say. Cam nods excitedly. His blue eyes gleam.
Performance-enhancing drugs are just the tip of the iceberg. People will go to great lengths to get to the top, and I mean bribery, blackmail, a ton of things that haven't been addressed yet. Athletes are a different breed. They don't think like us. They don't act like us. They make bigger sacrifices. It's just the way it is.
Yep, the list could go on forever. I press my lips to the rim of my cup. Kim is pressing way too many sensitive buttons right now. So, what's the argument of the piece? That maybe it's time to cut athletes some slack, because, well, let's admit it, they seem to be wired entirely differently. Look, this is your brain. He opens the lid to his coffee cup, and this is an athlete's brain. He takes my cup and opens it too. Both cups are nearly empty. Then he starts throwing candy bar wraps and an old piece of tissue he had tucked in his pocket. See the athlete's brain? It's cluttered with so much extra pressure. Elite athletes always score high on traits such as obsession, asceticism, the ability to focus on long-term goals. They're not as easily swayed by immediate gratification as most of us. Instead, they're able to push through pain, hunger, and even social condemnation to get to their goal. I'm not sure I buy that athletes should get away with shit just because they can't help themselves. Kim hurries to correct my conclusion. I'm not saying they can do whatever they want. I'm just saying it's harder for them to resist cheating. No matter how great they are and how big the risk is, they feel compelled to win. Just look at Lance Armstrong. So if someone did something wrong, very wrong, let's say to push their career forward, I nibble my lip thoughtfully, but then stopped because they felt it's morally wrong, then I'd say they're displaying mental strength to take such a step. They deserve a second chance. I blink my surprise. At their sport, of course, he clarifies. Right. Of course. We carry this conversation for a few more minutes, and even though I'm trying hard to concentrate on the actual conversation, I get a really weird feeling that Cam is... well, I wouldn't call it flirting. Nothing feels too inappropriate, but let's just say that he seems overly interested in knowing more about me and what I like and what I do and how I spend my free time. By the time we walk back to the reception area and Cam drops me off at Violet's desk so she can show me to the HR department, I am sure of two things. One, if Cameron could, which I guess he couldn't, seeing as he'll be my boss, he would have totally asked me out. He checked me out thoroughly when we said our goodbyes. Two, if Cameron asked me out, I would have said no, because, frankly, he may be perfect for me. Hell, Shane may be perfect for me. But the guy I want is perfectly imperfect, and I'm completely fine with it. I'm not fine with what Ty did. I'm not fine with how he handled everything, us, his secret, and his past mistakes, but yes, I'm fine with knowing that his actions are going to have some consequences, and I'm ready to shoulder some of the weight, some of the burden, and even some of the pain that comes with it. Too bad that after our last conversation, I'm starting to think that he might not be on board with that arrangement. I've always been a late bloomer, and I have a nagging feeling that I may be late again. Shit. Chapter 18. I officially have no social life. Nana Marty got whisked away to a month-long Hawaiian honeymoon. Mom and Dad are redecorating parts of their house, including the rooms that used to belong to me and Izzy. And Izzy is busy seeking out her next prestigious campaign and takes time off from Elizabeth's passion to work her ass off at the gym 5 times a week. At least she's not working out at the grind. I spend my time trying to rebuild my relationship with Shane, a relationship that both literally and figuratively took a pretty serious blow. Shane has started an internship at a new funky culture magazine based in San Francisco. It's called Dazed, and it's supposed to be the American version of Vice magazine. A week into his internship, I take the train into San Fran and meet him for lunch in a hipster sushi place in Russian Hill. When I confess to the server, who has 2 sleeves of tattoos and a lip ring, that I'm a vegetarian, he doesn't even blink. In fact, he hands me the restaurant's raw vegan menu and points at the most recommended dishes. God bless San Francisco. Shane sits across from me, wearing his TV is gooder than books tee and a frown. His face has long ago healed, and he is back to looking his normal self. But he doesn't look particularly happy. After the server takes our orders, he lets out a heavy sigh. Being an intern sucks ass, he says, and I take a sip from my Diet Coke and shake my head. You need to start somewhere, I point out. Shane and I have been incredibly lucky to bag paid internships. He shouldn't be sulking, especially considering the kick-ass magazine he's working for now. But Shane leans forward and lowers his voice.
Want to hear what I do all day? I go for coffee runs, transcribe boring interviews, and serve as the official wingman for the PAs and secretaries of the fucking place.
What do you expect? It's a trendy magazine. Everybody wants to work there. You need to work your way to the top.
I, on the other hand, I point my forefinger to my temple, I'm going to work for a local magazine that no one reads. I may get lucky and actually write articles, but the downside is that absolutely no one will read them.
Pow!
I pretend to shoot myself. Shane winces.
It'll get better.
He pats the back of my hand.
Or worse,
I manage a smile.
So what's up with you and Izzy? I know she paid you a visit in Vegas, but she wouldn't tell me what you guys were up to, and knowing you, it couldn't have been good.
Shane throws his body back into his chair and laughs wholeheartedly.
Why not? I broke up with Gemma before I saw her because I knew she'd kill me if she found out I was seeing a chick. No brownie points for that?
Not if she lost her virginity with you and you abandoned her again.
Wait, you can't lose your virginity twice, but you can still get hurt again. Shane rubs his face.
That's not the whole story, and it's inaccurate as hell, Miss Soon-to-Be Journalist.
I shrug. Answer my question. Are you guys involved in any way? Her sudden secrecy is freaking me out.
No, he reassures. Honest to God, the reason why she's not telling you anything is that there is nothing to tell. She was just checking on me and got me some room service in Vegas. And when we came back home, she stopped answering my calls. Again.
That's good.